since they are on tight schedules here, and we have a lot we want to cover, I think we'll just go ahead and get started, right? Nobody has to introduce me, I think. Whoops. My name is Ruth Van Rieken, and I've been working with MKs, missionary kids, and third culture kids for about 40 years. But actually, I've been living it for 78 years since I was born as one. And my father was a missionary kid before in Iran, which was then Persia. So I grew up as a child of a missionary. I was a missionary kid. We raised our four children. Not that I'm confused, but I have three daughters and I have some Liberian sons as well. And we raised them in Liberia, and then we've been living in Indianapolis for the last almost 40 years, which is hard to imagine. So the thing that we're going to talk about today, I want to set the stage for, if it's phase two, what was phase one? And I figure if you're here for phase two, then you must have some idea about phase one. But I want to set it in terms of how I'm at the point I'm at. And if you don't want to be here for this one, there's another conference on TCKs that's more general, maybe going on right now down the hall. So you're welcome to say, this isn't what I want. I'd like to go hear them. Actually, I'd like to be with them too, but they're not there. So when I was born and raised in Nigeria, I loved my life. I had a wonderful life. I appreciated, you know, I loved market, I loved my bike riding, I loved my trees, I loved all those things that were my life. And when I was, but I always grew up knowing, of course, that I was a U.S. American, right? And that one day I would go where? Home. We're going home. Well, that's fine. So when I was 13, we went home. And as many, many, many MKs, third culture kids know, it's not quite what you expect. Because when I got there, it was pre-integration days, so I looked like all the kids in my school. And they assumed that I knew what they knew. But guess what? I knew how to play soccer, which we called football. Nobody played it back then in the States. But they called it football, and what were they doing? They were throwing it, like, hello, this doesn't make any sense whatsoever. They talked about Elvis, and I said, oh, who's he? I didn't go over it all well. And so I suddenly went from being a child that I thought people liked and that I knew how life worked to being an idiot. That's how it felt to me. So after a first year of being an idiot, I went to high school and didn't tell anybody that I'd ever been in Africa, cut the door. My parents, huh?
High school.
Ninth grade. Then my parents went back to Nigeria, and I stayed with my grandma and my aunt, because in those days, there was no schooling overseas. And, I mean, there was no American schooling overseas for high school at that point. So I had a wonderful time in high school. We had a great Bible club. My aunt and my grandma were wonderful for me. And so life was going on well. It kept going on well. I met David when we met each other, and I said, what do you want to do when you grow up? And he said, I want to be a missionary doctor in Nigeria. I mean, he had the right country, you know, not only the right profession. And as a child, I had spent my whole life going to the villages with the teams and watching eye surgery, and I had one goal in life, which was to be a medical missionary. And I was going to be a doctor until I took chemistry in high school. And then I thought, well, that might not work so well. Maybe eventually I decided to become a nurse, and I was, and we married. We went to Liberia instead of Nigeria because Nigeria wouldn't give us visas, as it turned out, when he was a med student and we had an elective. So we wound up in Liberia, and it's a long story after that. But in the end, that's where we went back. We had a wonderful time in Liberia. The first year was awful. Forget your first term, but that's okay because I think the enemy tries to mess with us, and we had 10 times we got robbed and 6 people died that were close to us, but it was all part of, you know, God's shaping. And eventually The only problem, it was fine, except there was one problem. They didn't want me to do my nursing because they had Liberianized the nursing and they didn't want us taking the jobs from people there. Well, that was fine, except it was kind of messing up with my call. Because God's called me, you don't want me to do it, now what? But it wound up that I wound up doing Bible studies with international community that I had never expected, because we were always the poor missionary cousins when I grew up. You know, we had the cement floors, and we went to market, and they went to the fancy stores, and they had all those things. But I started to learn about cross-cultural marriages and all kinds of things because these people were in a very different world than I had ever been. So that was okay. I was a little surprised because that wasn't what I thought would be my people group. But I didn't know God was teaching me things. At the end of our time in Liberia, there was a day that God said, you won't be here forever, and I expected to be, so that was a surprise. But it's a long story short, but because of that, our daughter was going to come home a few months ahead of us. And that was fine, except that I went into an old depression. After we had been in Africa when he was a med student, and we came back to St. Louis, I went to my first depression in my life. I didn't realize that I had not dealt with my goodbyes and my Africa self and all that. And now I was feeling the same thing. So somebody was talking about inner healing in our Bible study, and I said, would you pray for me, because there's something that needs healing that I don't know what it is. And so I began to do some journaling, and I started to journal with my first night in boarding school, because I thought, okay, my daughter's leaving. I went to boarding school at 6. There must be a connection. And so when I started to do that, I started to realize the depth of my loss, and the fact that my life had been so good had made it hard for me to process all this. So anyway, to make a long story short, in the same time, I found out there was going to be the first ever international conference on missionary kids. And I wound up sending Dave Pollock, who was the man who organized that conference. I sent him a letter, and I said, I'm 39 years old. Nobody ever did a reentry seminar. Nobody ever did all the things you're talking about. And I'm just trying to figure out my life. And you're having a conference. You're still not talking about the adult. So, you know, if you want to see what I'm writing, I send it. So I did, and I wound up at that conference. But that was the beginning in the traditional, the historical, more mission approach to actually looking at missionary kids. And do you know, when they did that conference, Dave was not allowed, or the other organizer, to talk about anything but education. They said, the kids are fine. They don't have problems. Don't make problems for them. But we'll talk about education. And so Dave took that, and he did. But they gave three of us who were adults one little session to talk about our story. And so when they had the second ICMK in Quito in 1987, that time they actually talked about the kids. And I was asked to do a plenary, and I did it on the paradox of pain and faith, because I had realized that in my life growing up, if you have enough faith, you shouldn't have pain. And if you have enough pain, then you don't have enough faith. But Jesus, in the years right before, had showed me Christ in the garden. And in his moments of greatest faith, he had his greatest pain. And his greatest pain, he had his greatest faith. So that began sort of a new time in missions. That afternoon, I had taken the book. The journaling had become a book, and it went different places. And there was this sort of explosive reaction. Either people were writing me saying, I thought I was the only one, or I was hearing missions were kind of nervous because I said I cried in boarding school. And that was kind of our sacred cow, I didn't realize, because all the kids went to boarding school. And so there was this time that was confusing for me, but missions began to look at the issue of the MK and what the story was. In the meantime, at that same conference, God gave me a vision that he said at the end, he said, you need to go look for the ones that got lost. There's a lot of MKs that got lost. And I had a picture of Christ taking this little girl down a path, and there were all these bushes, and looking under one at a time. And yes, there were people there who'd gotten lost. And I realized the heart of Jesus is for MKs, as well as those our parents served. He cares about us. He cares about your kids. He cares about my kids. He cares about me. And so that began a journey. But during that time, I said, well, how am I going to find him? Because he said they're not going to be in church. They're not going to be in mission conferences. And he said, but they're in the international world. And so that began a journey out. And at that same conference, there was Norman McCaig, who was a business kid, and said, I think this is more than just missions. And so she had a Global Nomad conference. And the very first one I went to, I was talking to somebody, and you know, he was sitting smoking his cigarette. And I said, oh, what did your parents do? Figuring they were corporate or something else. And he goes, they're missionaries. I thought, oh, are you telling me something? And so God has taken me out into the secular world, into learning all kinds of things about people out there. And in that process, just to make sure we're all on the same page, Dave Pollock also began to work in that larger world. He had gone to RVA is where he started. He was a dorm parent there, and he had been speaking at the seminary there. So his definition was a person who has spent a significant time of developmental years outside the parent's culture. And the reason he talked about the development was because that's when identity and language and so many things are formed for the kids. And so that was important. And the mobility was part of it, because with the mobility, that's what I began to realize with my life, was so much loss. He added to it, the elements are taken in. That's not what the third culture is. A lot of people say, oh, I just mix and match. But that's not what it is. It's an experience, a shared experience of what it's like to live in this world of global mobility among many cultures. And so he said that the sense of belonging is that. And if you go to a conference, even a conference like this, don't you feel at home and you don't even know each other? Because we've all shared some experiences. So that was all fine. And then there were many gifts. There were people moving between different cultures and all these wonderful things that we had. But as we talked about all of that, this interesting thing to me was people started coming to me and they said, we didn't do it that way, but we relate to it. And so why was that? Or I felt that way, but I never left the country. I just did cultures inside. And so at some time, they still related to this issue of belonging. These were the two big challenges. For all the wonderful gifts we have, the question of who am I and where do I belong is this question that just is the question that grips people. The worst question you can say is, where are you from? Or, you know, whatever, right? I see nods. If you say where you're from, I still don't know where I'm from. I just say I live in Indianapolis, because that's okay. And where do I belong? But the issue of loss and unresolved grief is what winds up in depression and anger and anxiety and all kinds of things, even when people are 30 and 40 and 50, if they don't deal with it. Because people like me, I never knew why I had this depression that other people might not see. But I had never dealt with my losses because I didn't have permission to. I didn't understand. So when people started coming to me and saying all these wonderful things, I thought, can we look at the bigger story? What's going on in the world here? And if we make a new language, can we have a new discussion? And so we tried this. Cross-cultural kid is somebody who's grown up in many cultural worlds for any reason, not dependent on geography or your parents' job or anything else. And if we separate the two kind of groups that were in the other group and talk about traditional third culture kids, the people first studied went overseas because of a parent's job. They were missionaries, they were corporate. And that impacts things because that lifestyle is chronic mobility. And if you want to compare and contrast, you have to kind of know what you're talking about. And then there can be domestic TCKs, kids who never leave their national boundaries, but they are, you know, there's 30,000 plus missionary kids in China, in India, who don't leave the country, but are switching cultures all the time because of the boundaries and the cultures that are there. So when we do that, we have all kinds of experiences we can look at. And I think taking what we've learned from our past and starting to apply it in a globalizing world has been of great interest to me, but also of great joy. So we have traditional TCKs and domestics. So if you're a TCK, you are also a CCK. But then we have kids who are bicultural and by mixed racial heritage, borderlanders, international adoptees. A big one in today's world is refugees. Because are they having mobility between cultures? I mean, there's all kinds of extra things. Immigrants, minorities. Under other, somebody came to me once and said, why didn't you put disabilities? And she was the child of two deaf parents, CODA, if you know that, child of deaf parents, of deaf adults. And she said, that's a whole other culture that I have to transcend. It's another language. All of a sudden, guys, we've got a topic that takes us into the world. Okay? This has been the most interesting thing. So we started a Families in Global Transition, which includes all these people, and I've learned so much. But what I also learned the first time I used it was how complex life is getting for many people. I just went between Africa and, you know, Chicago and back and forth. But the first time I used this, this woman said, can you be in more than one circle? And she said, we're from India, so we don't speak the same mother tongue, my husband and I. We went to different places in India, so our kids are domestic TCKs. We immigrated to the U.S., now they're immigrants, right? We're children of minorities now because, you know, we're different than the major culture. Traditional TCKs, because he got a job with the company and then they went overseas. And every place we've gone, they go to school in a different language than what we have at home. Now, what is this looking like, guys? It's not a simple story anymore, okay? We can't just talk about one thing. So that was all part of it. During this time, I met Danao Tanu, who said to me, because I thought, well, you know, we're all kind of sharing this identity stuff, and we are. But people were also saying to me, your book, the Third Culture Kid book, really helped me, but it wasn't enough. And I thought, what do you mean it wasn't enough? I put all kinds of stories for all kinds of cultures in there trying to do that. But one day, Danao, who did her PhD work in the Asian experience, said, I met her when I met her early on, and she said, you guys think you're so multicultural, but nobody knows who I was when I went home. I was in an international school, and I had to be Western by day to fit in. So everybody saw me as the same, as Western. When I went home at night, I had to be Asian. And if I took my IB culture of asking questions and all that and took it home, I was in trouble. And she said, you really don't know. You're not as multicultural, as cross-cultural as you think, because nobody at school knew me. And she said, I began to have, you know, racism against myself. I began to wish that I was anything but Asian. And that was a new thought for me, because that wasn't my story. And so eventually she and Isabel Min started TCKs of Asia. I have learned this enormous amount from them about this next level of the story. When there are all these kind of complications, what does that do to the TCK story that we're used to talking about? And that's what we're going to look at. At the same time, there was this conference a couple weeks ago when they had International TCK Conference, and I literally gave a baton to Danao and some of my friends, and I said, it's your turn now, but my feeling is God is not finished with that first vision about the MKs, because what I'm starting to realize, even at that conference where they had so many panelists that were MKs of the other backgrounds, non-Western, is the story is even harder for today's MKs. I've gotten very involved with the abuse issues, the historical abuse issues of missions, which is a whole other story. But so often, I think this is just carnage that didn't have to happen. It's not that doing missions was wrong, but this happened, and that happened, and it never had to happen. The enemy is working to destroy. And you know what? He's going to do the same thing for this generation of MKs. So I want us to think, as the body of Christ, what are the new challenges that are being faced among our MKs? Yes, the TCK is here, but there are some specific things. Because one of the things when you grow up a mission kid, you grow up in a God culture. And what happens when bad things happen in a God culture where the system itself is representing God? Who gets blamed in the end? So many have lost their faith, folks, because of things that happened when they were MKs that didn't need to happen. So we're going to look at the extra challenges that MKs, separate, that might not be like me, are facing. How are we responding? And what else can we do? I will tell you the truth. I was at the Asian meeting earlier for what the Asian American, the Asian American Canadians feel and the special challenges they have. There were only about 30 people from the whole conference there, and there were only 3 of us who were not Asian. And I thought, do we even know enough to learn what these special challenges are? So we're going to try and open that today. All right, Julie, I've asked her to read. I was going to put us in small groups, but I don't think we can do that very well here. So I'm asking her, plus we're being recorded, maybe you could come up here, read Su Min's story. And I'm going to ask her to read the story of, it's compiled from a friend of mine who works with Chinese missionaries in Egypt. Yes.
Su Min's story. 10-year-old Su Min goes from Asian country of birth.
Listen to the mic, please.
10-year-old Su Min goes from Asian country of birth to an Arab country where her parents become missionaries. In both the home and host country, identifying themselves as missionaries will pose imminent danger to them. So they go with a business mission model, BAM. Neither parents nor child speak English or Arabic when they arrive in the host culture. The parents do not have the resources to put the child in an international school, so enroll her in a local Arabic-speaking school. The parents begin to study Arabic, but it is a couple of years until they become fluent in it, and the child picks up Arabic much quicker. The family speaks the mother tongue at home, but it is not the language of Su Min's educational system. When family returns to home country to visit family, how do they explain the situation they're in or why they have made this choice?
Okay. Are there challenges I didn't face? What are some of them?
Learning a new language.
Learning a new language. I learned Hausa, but it wasn't the language of my education, right? I learned it to be conversant with my friends. So right off the bat, many, many, many of the kids who are from these new sending countries or the global south wind up in schools that they're not in their home language. So what does that do?
That can scar a kid's life, you know, if you're not ready for that.
It can scar their life because what does it change? For many kids.
Relationship with their parents.
It changes the relationship with their parents. One of the podcasts for the TCKs of Asia is A Stranger in My Own Home. Because their school culture is so different than their family culture. And so, depending on what the culture is, it starts to bring estrangement. So what are some other things that come up? You have language?
Self-confidence.
Self-confidence, yes. Because?
Language and culture are so intertwined. It's also learning the culture at the same time.
Yes, they're so intertwined. And so maybe I can do it in Arabic, but then you go home and you're going to, how are you going to do it in Chinese? Right? So many kids lose almost, maybe not this story, but the opportunity to go back to their home countries and go to school because they may speak it at home, but they don't have the educational language. And so when they do go home, they're lost. And so this is a big problem for some. Now, some, you know, the parents try and teach at home, but what else do you see in the story? Yeah. Yes, because she said because they're in a communal culture, they're going to be disconnected from their grandparents when they come home. And the reason?
Language barrier.
It will be language. Now, they may keep the language at home. One of the things in the early days when people immigrated, they tried to tell the kids, they tried to stop the language of where they were so they could fit in. But certainly there's a lot of studies, and if you want to do anything to help, you know, make sure your children maintain that language at some degree, because they won't be able to talk to their grandparents. And what does that do? I have a friend who came over from Kenya, and he lives actually here in Louisville someplace. And he never taught his kids, his home language. And so they're mad as adults now because they can't go back to Kenya and speak to their relatives. But he was trying to help them integrate in the States, so he didn't want them to be, you know, trying to do two things. So that's a problem. Language is a huge thing. What else? Yeah.
Working in restricted countries.
Yes.
As opposed to being able to be open, like your parents could openly commission areas.
100%. This is a huge thing, working in restricted countries, where even what the reason for being there can't be visible, but it can't be visible for them at home either. Because if either side knows, they will have to stop or they will be restricted. And so the kids grow up almost confused about why we're even here. I've heard that from quite a few, you know, like, why are we going through all of this when we really don't understand what the reason is? And so there's also that sort of danger, because I think a lot of times parents can't tell their kids, at least early on, unless the kids say something. So, what else? Anything else? Yeah.
Status.
Sorry? Okay, I didn't quite hear all of that because it's a little far. Could somebody...
The loss of status.
The loss of status. Thank you. Yes, okay. Yes, that's a big thing, and it's invisible, isn't it? It's one of the hidden losses, that my parents had status before, and now they've lost it for whatever reason it's here. So all of the... Whereas in my background, as we'll see later, I was raised in colonial Nigeria. White people had what?
Status.
Even though I was a minority, I had privilege. And so that was a big difference in between. Okay, so anything else that you see? We'll talk about this in a bigger story. Certainly financially, if somebody came from China with a business, their kids would be in the international school. They would also be learning English, which is a status language, you know, where then you have access. So these kids also are not learning a language that, if they went back to China, sometimes I've heard from some of these kids, you know, English is a power language. And if they go to school where they learn English and return, then it's sort of like your trip was validated. But if you didn't learn something like that, it's a problem. Okay, yes.
They may not have Christian friends.
May not have Christian friends. Probably don't. In that situation, unless they find a church or something, but generally that certainly could be, you know, a problem. And why can't they be homeschooled?
Parents are busy.
Parents are busy, but what kind of resources? Are there any Chinese homeschooling co-ops? Are there?
No, probably not.
I think somebody's working on it now, but you know, that's one of the things that hasn't been. Okay, so what time is it? I wanted to read a story also from. Do you have any questions on this? Are we making any sense? I cannot tell you how much I want you to understand. There's something we all need to do, and I don't know what we need to do, but I'm trying to open some windows here today. Is Tony here? All right, I had asked Tony Weider. David, you want to read the story from... This is my husband, David, who has put up with me for 56 years. And it's really, he gets a medal in heaven for that.
This was David's story?
Yeah.
Okay.
This is someone I met. This is someone I met at the TCK conference 2 weeks ago. And he's...
Hosea is the first indigenous African MK. His parents answered the call to go to a neighboring African country in the early 1980s. These are some of the thoughts that he wrote. You can see his handout for the full story.
I have that later.
Unlike the MKs from the pioneering teams of missionary work to Africa, either in Europe or America, it is a different experience for an indigenous African missionary kid. I will pick up one challenge for now. I would love to talk about my educational life, a journey that made me question so much about God, His mission, His church, and His missionaries. We went through six different missionary locations within Kenya in the space of 14 years, and this had a great implication on my learning. My parents had no training for homeschooling. To be sincere, I would envy children from the missionaries from the West who had school right at their home, even if they had a tutor come from the field to teach them. My parents had to utilize the public schools around us for which had academic difficulty. One of the schools I attended had no desks. We would sit on concrete blocks or metal water pipes while using our thighs as tables to write and complete our assignments. We also faced hatred because of our parents were missionaries and because it was a Muslim community we were living in. We would receive punishment for nothing bearing marks of whips on our bodies. We experienced being infected with jiggers while in the school, making our feet itch, which was a horrible experience. Each time we changed schools, we knew it was another time to repeat either one class or two classes or three classes backwards, and this put us hopelessly back in school. As a result of these challenges, it took 14 years for me to finish elementary school when it should have been done in 8 years. This meant that to all my friends I knew, when we started school life, I was at least 1 year in college when I had just done primary school. I felt God had forgotten my parents because just across our home, I would see other missionary kids doing well and having fun. I wondered if we were serving the same God.
Do you know those stories are out there? Does it matter? Are they part of our body? They are. One body. One spirit. No more Jew nor Greek. How are we living it out communally? The Bible also says when they see you have love for one another, they will do what? They will know you're my disciples. And this isn't about castigating the past. We all build on the past. We build on what we know. We build on where we are. But we can never stop with where we are. And sometimes what's happened, I learned at this other conference and from other people, many of the mission leaders in some of these places are like the Western leaders were 40 years ago. You just pick up your Bible and you go, God's going to take care of the kids. But we've learned that God has also given us capacity to do the things that can make it different so that we can do both the gospel and not lose the kids. So I'm going to go through a few more things and then we will have a little more discussion. Oh, that was your turn. I want to go, last year, I took a friend of mine, KT, to Mental Health and Missions, and she made this, she gave the talk and got a standing ovation. because of the message she brought. And she's the one who designed these things, so I asked her, can we just look at some of your handout? She calls them the old sending countries, not that we're so old, but the ones that have traditionally sent missionaries. And this is, you know, the group. And the new sending countries, Brazil, Costa Rica, Ghana, India, South Korea, Nigeria, Philippines, Singapore, China, Liberia, I know. There's all kinds of countries. But these are not the countries that have the history of sending missions like some of the rest of us do. And so that's the beginning, is understanding that the missionary body has globalized. And we can't ignore each other. We can't just say, it doesn't matter, you have to deal with it. And it doesn't mean we have to rescue. It means, how do we partner? How do we come together? So these are some of the things that new... the challenges that she's saying. Oh, I didn't even go through Hosea, I'm sorry. What were any extra challenges you saw from his story? I'm sorry. Anytime I do something for the first time, I mess up. But what were his anything different from his story, from the first story?
Getting an education.
Getting an education over and over and over. This is a huge issue. And when he tried to get an education, what happened? He said to me, if I'd been white, I would have been at RVA. Because it was, you know, same mission. Why not? Because we don't think in somehow these bigger terms. And I recognize it was a long time ago. But still, these are the things that, you know, so there are more complexities between school and family culture. And even if he was going to the local school, he said he didn't realize he was Kenyan until he was 15, because he always looked like all the other people that he was around. And so he didn't also know his mother tongue, and that was a problem for him. I have his whole story written out there. He said, well, you can just take pieces of it, but for this vignette. But if you want to read the whole thing, pick up a piece there, and I've also got the slides printed out if you want to take them home and read them a bit. But they become hidden immigrants in their host culture in a way that usually we weren't. You can be a hidden immigrant. The kids who went to Europe, the kids who did that, where you look like the host culture, but you're not from it. But this potential internalized racism, because what did he wish he was? If he had been white, he would not have had some of these issues, and he knew that. And so he was also in some of these schools. Some kids are in boarding schools, because one of the things also that many of these new sending country missionaries are the ones going to very difficult places. Maybe old sending countries used to, when you think of Hudson Taylor and all those people. But a lot of Western people are not welcome in some of these countries. And they're going to some of the most difficult places, but they don't have resources there for their kids. And so I at least knew my mission family was my family. That was a very strong feeling for me. But when you can't even acknowledge that your parents are with a mission, you lose some of that. You lose the resources in your own language. And lack of education because of language and finance. One of the things that really is different for the MKs in this particular environment is the finances, because there are a lot of corporate, diplomatic, all these people who go with a completely different financial basis. But for many of these kids, that's a big thing. A lot of times they can't go back, as we said, for tertiary education, because they don't have the educational language. And they have a lot more limitations often on visas and travel and things like that. So that can be hard. As I said, many in their mission leadership do not acknowledge loss and grief. Just like in the old days, it was hard, I think, for some of the Western missionaries to do that, because it feels like it's being unfaithful. Also, maybe culturally, are emotions as allowed? Are you allowed to express emotions easily? I think for many that's not culturally simple. And so there's a lack of permission to grieve. So what can we do? What do you think? Anything? Hi, Neil. Well, before we... Huh?
Name it.
Name it. Let's build awareness. And develop partner resources. Neil, I would love for you... Yes, Neil is... I know Neil from a long time ago. Neil is an MK. You're not an MK?
No.
Oh, well, anyway, I've known you...
I'm the father of an MK.
Okay, but you're... What do you think about this? Because you've worked in Thailand for a long time.
I went on my first home assignment from Thailand in the mid-1980s, and John Pollock was sharing at the first home assignment institute called back then. And when he was sharing about the issues that you're talking about, almost all of the adult missionaries who are home from who knows where, Thailand, Indonesia, Laos, all over East Asia, there wasn't a dry eye. Nobody could articulate what they felt, but someone was talking their language for the first time, I think. And then we got to meet you, and we've learned a lot about... most people who are MKs don't know, who are TCKs don't know it, don't know they are until it gets explained to them what that means.
Okay. So Neil has been at many conferences with me and his wife, and they've raised cross-cultural kids in their experience. But I would like to hear from some others of you who have maybe grown up this way or have insights before we go on. Is there something that you think we could do or something that was done for you that was helpful? Maybe in the next thing. For me, it was helpful to have a name, first to be an MK, then to know I was a third culture kid, that I belonged to a bigger group. And in that third culture kid experience, like 90% of what we share, we share. And that's been my life's work, I guess. But in the mission community, in the military community, they have some specifics in the Foreign Service. But we in missions have specific things that are different maybe than some other TCKs because of the finances, because of the faith, because of these things. And that's where I'm thinking, how do we now address them? Somebody is resonating out here with something, or you'd like to share your story? Yeah.
I think one thing that's important, and I think the building awareness is important, is actually giving MKs, cross-culture kids, third-culture kids, language to be able to express what's been going on, to understand who they are, also is very important.
Yes, and Hosea was in this conference. He said, I never knew I was a TCK before. And so all of a sudden, you know, and he said that somebody just listened to his story. He kept saying, oh, it's not a big one. We said, no, we want to hear it. So it's the first time I think he articulated it. And you know what he's going to do? He's already gone back to Kenya and started to find other Kenyan MKs and TCKs. He said, I want to have a little conference here. I want to have some meetings here, and let's see what we can do ourselves to raise awareness and start to get these things known. Anybody else have a thought right now? Yeah, Jules.
One of the issues is really the sense of belonging, right?
Sense of belonging, yes.
That many times was lacking in the cross-cultural, you know, world. And I've talked to many MKs or just cross-cultural kids throughout the years since I've read your book and since, you know, been introduced to the topic. And I lost count of how many. Their eyes just, you know, they spark. It's like, I found my group. I found my tribe, you know, even though it's a very diverse and it's a global
right.
community, but they feel like they belong. And it's almost like a relief.
Well, I think for all of us who found out we had a name, there is that place, that aha moment we call. But we have to remember that they are included in that language. Can I say that? When Danao did her work in an international school, she realized that the Western teachers saw the TCKs as more the Western kids, but they didn't count the Korean kids who were living in Indonesia, and they didn't count all those other kids. They were just Koreans, but they didn't call them TCKs. Were they third culture kids if they were living outside of their culture? Of course. And I think we begin to say, wait a minute, you know, there's a bigger cohort than we kind of think of mentally. All right, so we need to build awareness. Another way we can build awareness, at this other conference that they had in Thailand, every panelist was either from Africa, Asia, Brazil, someplace that wasn't a traditional sending country. And they told their stories. And guess what? We all cried. We heard. Nobody had asked them to tell their story before. I shouldn't be telling you the story for them. That was what I think was so powerful for last year at the Mental Health and Missions, was KT told the story for herself and other people. So I maybe didn't do a very good job here. But we need to hear the stories from the people who lived them. And we need to listen well. So what kind of resources are needed for people like this? What would have helped either one of these other people? Yeah.
So our mission agency has opened a new division for African missionaries.
Great.
But we actually have someone raising outside support.
Okay.
So that their kids can have an education like the white people on their team.
Okay, so they have an African missionary division with somebody raising support to develop educational opportunities. And also, what are some of the ways people can be educated? I have a Ghanaian friend. Their kids are going to boarding school because that's the only option they have. But there's some issues happening there that, you know, are ones that I think we need to be working on prevention again. But they didn't know that maybe their kids could go online. Maybe it's not all about homeschooling. But are there online schoolings? Are there online schoolings in different languages? Can we be developing things like that? Because another thing, even in mission organizations, do we have translators when we have a missionary meeting? A lot of times, the missionary parents are kind of excluded from the mission community because everything's in English and they may not even understand fully. It's not the heart language. So are there better things we can do as a mission community to begin to visually and verbally and consciously say, you know, we belong to a bigger whole. And those of us who speak English and are used to it all being in our domain, are we willing to listen through translators? And at this conference a couple of weeks ago, they had simultaneous translators in several languages for the people who came, because a lot of the people who came didn't speak English that well. So are those things that maybe we could make concessions that we could think about? What other kind of resources? Yeah.
I was just going to say one of the things that I do in our mission organization, we do sports.
Sports.
And what we do with a lot of our missionary families from all over the world is, and one of the things we hear, we always educate the kids, build awareness, I hand them your book immediately, but we also let them know they're not forgotten. Because
okay.
When it comes to sports, and if there's any missionary families here or kids, they know they can't really, if they're in high school and they want to excel in sports, they're not going to get it in the country they're in, and they're completely forgotten by the country they're from. And what we have dealt with, and it's literally thousands and thousands of missionary families and a lot of military especially, to remind them where we actually exist, to help them find their place when they get back here, help them find colleges, help them find the next level of sports that they want to be in, just providing them an outlet, say, hey, you're not forgotten.
Great.
Because I would say a lot of it is they're forgotten.
Well, I think that's a very important thing, they're not forgotten. There's lots of ways. He's saying sports is a way to say you're not forgotten. We can help you because for some kids, you know, if they want to excel and they don't have the chance to do it, that becomes a lost opportunity, as it can be for art or music or other things. So developing resources, yes.
Now, I Taiwan didn't grow up overseas, but I was spent 2.5 years in Southeast Asia in my early 20s. And I found coming back, I thought differently. And
sure.
I wasn't really welcomed. And I think one of the things which I think really needs to happen is educating our local churches. The American church tends to be very Amerocentric. And so when you come back to the U.S., having lived overseas, often you just look at things differently, and people are very resistant to doing that. And I think the door of a good friend of mine who came back from living in China her whole life, and one of the first things her uncle said to her is, "Isn't it great to be back in the U.S.A.,
sure.
God's own country?"
But this is the thing, you know, this is the story for every single nationality, mm-hmm. is when they go home. So how do we help the churches in Brazil? How do we help the churches in Kenya? How do we help the churches in India understand the story also of the people they're sending? How do we contextualize? There was a lot of discussion about contextualization of the TCK experience. There's some friends have just translated the TCK book into Japanese, but we kept getting things, can we leave that out? Can we leave that out? Because they have contextualized it for the Japanese experience. And so, you know, people say it's the TCK Bible. I say it's not the Bible. The Bible is set in stone. This is not set in stone. There are ways that you can take it. There's ways that the language doesn't work. Guy Ede has written a book for the Spanish group that he works with, and he's used it a little different language, and he's made it contextual for that experience. So we can take the things we've learned, but when you work in a culture, how does it work in that culture? Yes, ma'am. And I think working with parents, one of the things that missions has to be, I think, really aware of is God made parents for their kids. And often in the past, missions took the place of parenting by making systemic rules for how things had to be. And some to this day in some places I was hearing about a couple weeks ago are still saying in the new sending countries, that people have to send their kids to boarding school at 6, like we used to do, because it's a rule. But I've also seen where they've made it a rule, when we were all going to be wonderful, that everybody had to go to local schools. Well, that may not be the right thing either. My parents my mother said, well, I read the book, it didn't say I couldn't, but they homeschooled us in a day before it was homeschooling, after we'd been away for 2 years. So parents can make choices when they're not afraid, and if the community itself actually trusts parents to make choices for their kids, that, you know, some kids have dyslexia and there are online programs, there's all kinds of things. So we need to get updates, we need to be aware, and we need to start working together, I think, to say, well, this is what we've learned in our past experiences. You know, things we did right, things we did wrong as communities. How can we help you understand? Or, you know, how can we help you also develop the resources? And what is it you need for us to come alongside. We don't want to do it for people because they know how their cultures work. But we can encourage, we can offer. And certainly one of the things that I think has happened is there's MKs of Asia have their own book, Rice Chapatis or something else. So, you know, they're starting to write their own literature. They're starting to write their own context, but still in English. But, you know, where can we start to hear the stories of these extra things and then become aware just to be listening? So sort of the same things, offer programs, another line, provide networking. In a conference like this, we could have a whole networking session on something like that where people who have worked with it a long time can help the new sending countries, or the new sending countries can teach us what they've been doing well. You know, there's some really good things that can happen. And so I think that another thing that we, that just to make the point about the English, I think Danao keeps telling me, she said, when the kid learns English, sometimes they feel superior to their parents. And that can be another problem in the families because the kids start to feel like, oh, I've got English and, you know, I've got a trump card on your parents and things like that. But what are any other responses? Any other of you who have experience? Yes.
Well, one thing I was thinking, it's not a one-size-fits-all, but a debrief process is really helpful both for TTKs but also for families to understand kind of what they're going through. And it's not a, oh, I do a debrief and then I'm done, I'm good, I'm fixed. It's more of a starting the journey to start grieving some of those losses because it's really hard to start new, start fresh, start that new stage of life if you haven't processed the losses.
Yes, it is important. One of the things that when she was talking this morning about what we learn when we work and follow God's plan, one of my biggest things is what it means to be a person made in the image of God, because that transcends every culture. Yes?
Do you have any resources for TTKs for one foot in individualistic cultures and one foot in...
Come see me afterwards. She said, do you have any resources for TTKs who are one foot in individualistic cultures and one foot in collective cultures, right? Well, Danao, when she... Her book is called Growing Up in Transit. And so that's the first book that really addresses some of these next level things, I think, in languages, her PhD work. And so she's done that. That's out there, Growing Up in Transit. But I think this is where some of you who are doing it need to write it. You need to write. You need to have your seminars. You need to have that. You need to, I don't know if you were with the Asian missionaries and talking about that, because that was one of the huge issues, was how the culture that they come from conflicts with what we think in missions, you know, when you give up family. But if you're in a group that the family culture is, you know, where your parents and you can shame parents, and that's another thing for TTKs who are from some of these countries and these cultures. If you don't behave this way, you're kind of caught between the honoring of parents and trying to get out on your own and independence. So the field is wide open. I had a verse the other day that was kind of scary, but I fought a good fight. I've run the race. I finished my course. I hope I'm not all the way finished. But I'm very, very aware that it's time for the next generation to come and think and work on this. And it's time for us as the body to keep enlarging our tent and saying, you know, we're all going to be there in the end, people from every tribe and nation. In a world that is dividing, could we be the light? Could we? Could we as a community? God gave us this topic 40 years ago. He's grown it past us, but there's a whole lot of people who are in my family in global transition. People like Danao, who is a Christian. People like Isabel Min, who is a Christian. He's kept his people in there. They're not in missions, but they're teaching us. they're in it as a community of, and you know, their doors are open to them because they're so respected as the researchers they are, as the spokespeople that they are. But you can be too. If God takes a little girl from Nigeria and gave her the job that he did, it's not because of me. It's like they've been saying. It's because of God. And we're talking to Lisa. I met her in Afghanistan. And it was there that I was in a cold mission guest house one night. And it was a crazy trip because I'd never been there before. But we took little planes up to different countries. The city looked like the city I grew up in because it was a Muslim city with the kind of walls. I was hearing the sound of the prayer call like I did as a child. And my grandparents are buried just across the border in Persia or Iran, and I'd never been there. And I did some secular stuff. I did some retreats for the Christian workers there. And I was sitting there thinking, I think my friends in Indianapolis would think this was a crazy trip. And everything felt like all the pieces of my life came together. And suddenly I thought, I was born to do this. I don't have any fancy training, but God gave me a mind to ask questions. He gave me life experience. He gave me opportunities. Because that was my calling. And you're his workmanship, as much as I am. And everything about what he's given you is shaping you and is preparing you. And you don't have to be afraid to take that next step and say, what's the one thing I could do to help? Because if we don't, I don't want you to be 30 years down the pike, 40 years down the pike, and hearing the stories of what didn't have to happen. And the people who have left God because they hated missions. They hated their life in these ways. Not maybe the global part, but so many things, and especially like that. So I want to just ask, Lord, that you bless everyone who's here. I don't know what you've put in anybody's heart to do, but I know I can't do it all. I can't really hardly do anything except try and open some more windows. I pray you'll take any seeds that you threw, sowed here today. You'll grow them into trees. To the people who have felt so forgotten and so overlooked by the body of Christ, we'll see that they are seen. They're seen by you. They're seen by us. That we care. And may the world know that we are your disciples because we have love one for another that transcends the cultures that we come from. You've put us in our cultures for your purposes, but each of us is made in your likeness. We need relationships. We need to belong. We need to think. We need to know you no matter where we're from. Help us see first that likeness that we might care and not forget each other. I pray in your name. Amen. I think Hosea's story's there and copies of the PowerPoint are on the table if you want to take them as you go. Thank you.